Hello. Welcome to our verse-by-verse in-depth Bible study with Bible teacher Dr. Bob Utley. Now, here's Bob.
Continuing in Proverbs, we're going to close the book out today. We're going to be in Proverbs 31. The lesson today picks up a couple of verses from Proverbs 29, but they're on the family, and I've chosen just to do Proverbs 31 today. Verses 1 through 9 deals with King Lemuel. The problem with that is we don't know who King Lemuel is, and we don't have any. He's not a king in Israel. There are several manuscript variations here, and the reason I have chosen to teach through 31, even though he's not in the focal passage, is because his mother is the one that's going to give him these instructions. Mothers were the common teacher of children up to a certain age, both boys and girls, and then it was the spiritual responsibility of the father, especially, to educate the sons. Girls, for the most part, in ancient Israel, did not have the same opportunities for education as the men children did. Now, but that is, even when I say that, that comes across real chauvinistic to the modern 20th century America. We have our own cultural idiosyncrasies, and I'm not sure we can just say another culture's way of handling it is inappropriate. The trick is, does it allow people to have a fullness of life and faith in God? The women who record in the Bible seem to have that kind of position. Now, I realize that is not the norm, but it is an example of women that filled the place of mother and had input in their children and into their husbands' lives that I think is significant. Now, let's look at verse 1, if we could. It says, the words of King Lemuel, the oracle which his mother taught him. Now, many have said this word Lemuel means dedicated to God, something like that. And what we have here is the rabbi saying this is Solomon by a different name because we just don't have any other person. I wish Solomon took the advice this lady is going to give, and I don't think it's Solomon. Some translations, including the Syriac and the Targums, they have Mesa, M-A-S-S-A, King of Mesa. Now, that is a tribal group that's recorded in the Old Testament. 1 Chronicles 1:30, Genesis 25:14 is where this particular tribal group is mentioned, and that may be exactly what we have here. It's really hard to say. The word oracle is the Hebrew word burden. It is used in the sense of a prophecy, God laying a message on someone to pass on to someone else. Here, it's used in the sense of his mother. Now, either this is trying to show the quality of the training of men and women, or this mother was maybe the only one left of the parents. We just don't know much of the historical setting here for King Lemuel. In verse 2, what, O my son, and what, O son of my womb, and what, O son of my vows? Well, she's just trying to say, listen up, boy, it's important stuff. And so she's repeating this, O son. Now, when it says, O son of my vows, this may be a deal kind of like Hannah back in the book of Judges, the mother of Samuel, where she was barren and told God if he'd give her a child, she'd give that child to the temple. And that may be the idea here. The vow is not certain. It may be a vow for children. It maybe a special promise this mother made. We just don't know. Then in verse 3 it says, do not give your strength to women and your ways to that which destroys kings. Well, what in the world is that talking about? Well, it's unusual that a lady is saying don't give yourself to women. Since this fellow is called a king, it may be the idea of a very large harem. We can see some of the problems these large harems caused by what happened to King Solomon. The Bible records that many of the people in the Old Testament had many wives, polygamy. But the passage in verses 10 and following is definitely a passage of monogamy. And I think that even though that maybe the Lord allowed these men to have more than one wife because of the culture they were used to and came from, that does not seem to be the teachings of the Bible as a whole, and especially not the New Testament. So there is problems in multiplying wives, and that's what his mother, I think, is warning him against. Now, when it says that which destroys kings, I think you ought to keep in mind Solomon again. His women in his old age turned his heart away from the Lord. Now, then it says in verse 4, it is not for kings, O Lemuel, it is not for kings to drink wine or for rulers to desire strong drink. Now, Here's a good example of people proof text. And if you take verse 4 and use it by itself, you do not get the balance of verse 5 and 6. The reason that kings and rulers should not drink is not because that there is an evil in alcohol. It's because that rulers who drink too much do not handle their administrative responsibilities under God very well. And that's the whole problem in verse 5. Lest they drink and forget what is decreed and pervert the rights of all the afflicted or needy. God really cares for the poor person. If you haven't read the book of Deuteronomy, I think you've missed a real emphasis. We get so used to our lifestyle that we forget that God has a special concern and a special care for those who are ostracized by our society, those who have been afflicted and oppressed by our society. The have-nots are a special group to God. And this is a word of the king. Now, the deal is, the king may say, well, I'm not responsible, I drank too much. And what God's saying is, through the author of this proverb, don't use liquor as an example for inappropriate behavior, especially toward those who don't have. The widow, the orphan, the alien. And so I think it's a very good word. But that is, this can't be used as a proof text for don't drink, because look at verse 6. Give strong drink to him who is perishing, and wine to him whose life is bitter. Well, now here we have a balance. It's saying, king, you need not to participate in this because of your place of responsibility under God. But don't make a general rule and make it bad for everyone. There are some people it's appropriate to. And who is it appropriate to? Well, this is the verse that rabbinical Judaism interpreted, and the women of Jerusalem especially applied to themselves. And every time in Jesus' day, when the Romans were going to crucify someone, they would give that condemned prisoner some wine to drink mixed with frankincense, and it would just knock out their senses so that crucifixion wouldn't hurt them so badly. You might well see Mark 15:23. And so here we have an admonition to give wine to those who are going to, in Jesus' case, condemned to death. And then it says, to those whose life is bitter. Now in 1 Timothy 5:23, Paul says to Timothy, Timothy, take a little wine for your stomach. There's a medicinal use for wine. I'm sure you've watched enough John Wayne movies where they pour the whiskey over the bullet wound to realize there's an antiseptic usage, and that's what it seems to be talking about here. There's no demon in the bottle of rum. It's man's evil heart that uses the bottom of rum inappropriately. That's, I think, what the balance of this statement is saying. Now, then it says, let him drink and forget his poverty and remember his trouble no more. Okay, verse 8. Open your mouth for the dumb and for the rights of the unfortunate. Now, here is the second aspect of the king as administrator of God's justice, hopefully. And what the mother is saying to the son is, son, when you get in a place of responsibility, and there are people come before you with problems and decisions have to be made, son, remember that person who can't speak real well, and that person who's real nervous, and that person who seems to be really out of place. Son, don't just go with the powerful and those who are eloquent. Son, take up for those who really can't speak for themselves. I guess the example in my own day, which strikes my heart so deeply, when I, as a pastor, think about, Bob, who in my 20th century American culture, who do I need to speak up for that can't speak up for themselves? And I want to tell you, the issue of abortion really comes home for me in a verse just like this. Now, then it says in verse 9, open your mouth, judge righteously, and defend the rights of the afflicted and the needy. God really cares for the underprivileged and the down and out. I wonder if that really impacts your life in your easy, upper middle class, educational lap of luxury. God cares about the have-nots, and He wants you to structure your life so that you're able to help them in His name. That's a radical statement. This is a radical book. We've got a radically ethical God that will hold us responsible whether we're a king or New Testament, where we're a kingdom of priests, for the way we live and the way we act toward the poor and the needy and the underprivileged. So, watch out for wild living. Watch out for justice. That summarizes what Lemuel's mother said to him. That's plumb good advice, folks. Watch out for that wild living, and watch out for the justice of those who don't seem to have justice. Now, in verses 10 and following is a beautiful passage about an excellent wife. Now, I've read this over several times, and I went through a lot of books. And in this program, I'm going to show you some of the books I use to interpret the Old Testament, because a passage like this is so hard to get into. But this passage is not your modern equivalent on premarital counseling or marriage enrichment. This lady was a shrewd businesswoman. She is a very practical-oriented helpmate. But there's nothing here of marital love. There's nothing here of friendship and equality and all of that. I tell you, the Bible just doesn't put all its eggs in one basket. This is a great passage about some aspects of a godly woman. This isn't all there is. I think of the passage on the Song of Songs gives the sexual aspect, the love aspect, the wholesome, sensual aspect to married life. This passage gives a very practical aspect, but really by themselves, they're just not complete. And again, you need the New Testament emphasis on the place of a wife to really have the overall view of the place of the modern believing wife. Now, let's look at this, though, this particular aspect. Verses 10 through 31 is an acrostic in Hebrew. Every verse in your English Bible begins with the next consecutive Hebrew letter of the alphabet. Now, that's done for several reasons. Number one, most of these Old Testament passages were memorized, and so this was a mnemonic aid to help people memorize certain passages. There are several psalms that are acrostics. Psalm 25, Psalm 34, Psalms 145, Lamentations 1 and 2. Psalms 119 is an acrostic, but it goes with several verses instead of just one. So there are several of these mnemonic devices in the Old Testament because people memorized much more in that day. Now, an excellent wife, who can find? For her worth is far above jewels. Some were saying, well, this means that if you have to pay a high price for a dowry, she's worth it. Well, that may be it, but I really don't think that's the idea here. It's saying that someone who has the characteristics of a woman that's going to be described in this passage is worth far more than money. And I think we realize the value of that person we choose to walk with the rest of our lives, be it a man or a woman. That they know God and act responsibly is really a help in our world. Now, the heart of her husband trusts in her, and he will have no lack of gain. Well, here's that old, and it's all the way through this passage, it's that background that says if you're a godly woman or a godly man, you're going to be materially blessed. And I think there is some truth to that, but we have to balance it with other New Testament truths and the Old Testament reaction, which is found in Job and Psalm 73. Then it says, she does him good and not evil all the days of her life. She works with wool and flax. Now, flax is what you make linen out of, okay? And she works with her hands in delight, active energy, and she makes the clothes for the family. She is like a merchant ship. She brings her food from afar, which means she takes care of the preparation of meals. She rises while it is still night and gives food to her household. Most of these, just making meals took most of the women's days. It was a really long, involved thing. You know, there was a time when there weren't microwaves. You do remember them, don't you? And it took a long period of time to prepare food. So this is what it's talking about. Gives her food and portions to her maidens. Now, this is one rich lady. This is upper middle class, I want to tell you. She's going to have servants. She's going to have capital to buy a field. She's going to start her own import-export business. This is not your passage for a person in an underprivileged third world country. This lady really is a pretty wealthy lady, and she's going to use that wealth. She has, you see her has maidens in verse 15. She considers a field and buys it. She has some capital. She has some resources, and she's going to use it appropriately. From her earnings, she plants a vineyard. This is almost, I bet, if this lady was living in our day, she'd be one who reads the Wall Street Journal. That's the kind of lady this is. Now, it says, from her earnings, she plants a vineyard. She girds herself with strength and makes her arms strong. Now, you know, women who had to wash the clothes by hand, make the food and all of that, I'm not sure I want to wrestle on these Old Testament women. They were really physically very strong because women did much of the heavy work. And that's the idea of this lady. She is a strong lady. Then it says, she senses her gain is good and her lamp does not go out at night. When I first read that, I thought, aha, the first midnight madness sale. But it's not that at all. It's the idea that she keeps the lamp burning in the house. She has to get up in the middle of the night and make sure the wick is twisted and the lamp doesn't go out and there's oil in it. When I was in Israel a few years ago, I bought some oil lamps. This is an oil lamp from around 1200 B.C. It was found at the Dung Gate in Jerusalem during the time of David. You put the wick here and the oil sitting there. This is the kind of lamp that Jesus told the parable of the virgins about, the oil, you know. This is a lamp. It's also from Jerusalem. This was from the Qumran area. And it's a lamp that was used in the time of Jesus. I bought one more while I was over there. This is an oil lamp that's from the Byzantine period. It's from the Arab period. It's later in the New Testament time. And you see where the wick went in here. But basically, they're all the same. They're oil lamps. And that's what we're talking about here. She has to get in the middle of the night to put olive oil in these containers to keep the wick burning. If it goes out, they're a very hard start. Were no matches. Verse 19, of the distaff and the spindle, she weaved the clothes for her family. Look at verse 20. She had a real care for the poor. You knew that being here. Her hand goes out to the poor and the needy. It's not just that she's a greedy person, but she's responsible with the resources given to her. And she shares with others. Then it says she's not afraid of the snow for her household. What does that mean? Well, she gave careful forethought that everybody's going to have shoes and clothes. It says in the last part of verse 21 that all her household are clothed with scarlet. Now, the Septuagint and the Vulgate have double, meaning she made double thick clothes for the wintertime. But that involves an emendation in the Masoretic text. And really, it just may mean scarlet, which is a very expensive dye, meaning she's, again, a wealthy person. And that's seen down in verse 22 where it says her clothing is made from fine linen and purple. Again, very expensive material. And that dye was very high. Purple and scarlet were the sign of wealth and power in this day. Her husband is known in the gates. Now, the gate is the place of justice and the place of the social life. So it'd be like our town hall, city square, that kind of place. Okay? He sits with the elders of the land. She makes linen garments and sells them. She supplies belts or girdles. Now, not what you're thinking. A leather belt that held their robes together and they could hang their weapons on it. Now, mine has to the merchants or tradesmen, but the literal word here is the word Canaanites. And the word Canaanite came to be applied to all merchants, be Phoenician or Philistine or Canaanite or Arabian. Just men who trade. And so they would come to her house and buy these girdles that she made, these leather belts. Strength and dignity are her clothing, and she smiles at the future. Well, this lady has a confidence in God. She has some sense of foreplanning, but she leaves the future apparently in the Lord's hands. She opens her mouth in wisdom, and the teaching of kindness is on her tongue. Well, this is the Hebrew word hesed that really means loyalty. And I think that's a better translation. She looks well to the ways of her household, and she does not eat the bread of idleness. Her children rise up and bless her, and her husband also. He praises her, saying, and then we have a quote of the husband saying good things about the wife. Notice in verse 30 is a summary of some of the worldly things that often men look for in women. Charm is deceitful, and beauty is fleeting. Emphasizing that it is the character of a lady that's far more important than the facade of manners or physical beauty. I think that's what we need to hear. Give her the product of her hands and let her works praise her in the gates. And so that is a summary. This is a very wealthy lady, a very practical lady, a very business-oriented lady, but that's the section we're in. And again, you've got to have Song of Songs and Proverbs and Ephesians 5 and many other passages to really get the biblical picture of a believing woman and wife. And that's part of it. Now, this is a difficult passage because not a whole lot of meat here as far as applying it to your class. I would like to take this opportunity in this program to show you some of the resource books that are so helpful for me interpreting the Old Testament. Now, let me say to you before I show you these books. These books are only going to help you if you do something with them. And the only way for you to really do something with them is for you to index them in your Bibles. Let me just show you. This is one book. I'll give you the name in just a second. But look at the indexes here. Look at the indexes. These are all scripture references by page numbers. Look at all those. Now, that is too much for you to do unless you have a study Bible that you use. Get you several different kind of pens, a red pen, black, purple, green, and make a dot on the margin of your Bible on the verses that each one of these books that I'm going to show you list. And that way, when you come to a lesson, you'll see what books have references to these particular texts. Now, the first book I want to show you is a book called The Synonyms of the Old Testament by Griddlestone. This book is very helpful to me in the fact that it helps me as someone who is not fluent in Hebrew to understand the biblical usage of certain major Hebrew words. It's paperback. It is very good. Synonyms of the Old Testament by Griddlestone. All right? Let me show you another one. Rabbinical Judaism is very important in understanding some of these. This is called Every Man's Talmud. This is by a man named Cohen, which means priest. It's put out by a Jewish publisher, D-U-T-T-O-N. Now, this book is also indexed. This will help you get a Jewish perspective on the Old Testament and help you see some passages in the Jewish Talmud, the Babylonian Talmud, to be precise. This has been very helpful for me to get an insight into the Jewish scriptures. Now, there are several of these kinds of books out. I brought another paperback one so you can see it. This is called Manners and Customs of the Bible by James Freeman. And this book costs less than $5. It's still available for under about $6. And it is also indexed. It has pictures, and it goes through the entire Bible, Old Testament, New, and tries to explain to you customs and manners that you're not familiar with in 20th century America. This is very helpful. I use it quite often. Now, another man that I like very much, this is a man named Edersheim. He's a converted Jew, Alfred Edersheim. This is Sketches of Jewish Social Life in the Time of Jesus. Now, it will not help you a whole lot in the Old Testament, but it is rabbinical Judaism of the day in which Jesus lived, and it will help you tremendously on the New Testament and also give you some insight into rabbinical life, okay? Sketches of Jewish Social Life by Erdmans, okay? Now, a couple of books. This is two volumes, volume 1 and 2, and this is Ancient Israel by Roland DeVoe, a French scholar. Volume 1 is on the social institutions, and Volume 2 is on the religious institutions. They're paperback, but they really are very definitive works on Jewish social customs. And they're very inexpensive, $2.95 apiece when I bought them. I don't know what they are now, probably $10.95, but no, not really. They'll help you. They're indexed, and you'll like these. They'll really give you an insight into the customs and manner of the Bible. Now, another one that I'm very fond of, and this is another two-volume set. This is Judaism in the First Century of the Christian Era, and it's by a man named George Foote Moore. Now, George Moore was not Jewish, but the Jewish people say he's written a fair account of Jewish history. This is the social institutions and religious institutions, and they are paperback, and you can get them, and these books will help you. Now, I hope that when I mention books like this, you'll take me seriously, because these are things that through the years in your study of the Old Testament will greatly enhance your teaching ability. One of the things we need to do is know the resource books that are available to get us back to a first century mind or to a 2000 BC mind. Once we catch the flavor of that day, once we understand what they were saying and why they were saying it, then and only then can we apply it to our day. We cannot proof text the Bible and just pretend like the Bible was written solely for our culture. It is not. We must understand their culture, what the author was saying to their day, and then apply that truth to ours. These books will greatly help you do that. I've enjoyed being with you. I hope to see you again, same time, same place, next week. God bless you.
We hope you have enjoyed this time of study. You have been provided with an accompanying outline of the lesson, but also available is a sheet of the definitions of Greek grammatical terms. If you would like this, please write us at International Sunday School Lesson Incorporated, Post Office Box 2711, Lubbock, Texas, 79408. Also available is Bob's historical grammatical studies on many controversial and difficult Bible subjects, as well as exegetical verse-by-verse studies of entire books of the Bible. The catalog of these audio cassette tapes is available free upon request. We would love to hear your comments about this teaching ministry. Write us at International Sunday School Lesson Incorporated, Post Office Box 2711, Lubbock, Texas, 79408. Until next week, may God through Christ bless you.
Focal passage for today. The book of Kings is a very hard kind of thing to teach because there are not a whole lot of practical applications, but I think there are some here. I think we see, number one, that God deals with men the way they are. I think we see the fact that God, through one faithful parent or forefather, blesses the descendants. I think we see here that even people who have a good heart toward God can't always change the circumstances they find themselves in. I think that's some of the truth that's here. I hope that you will read through this in your own words. Write the central idea of each paragraph in your own words and try to focus in on that. And I've enjoyed being with you, and I hope to see you same time, same place next week. God bless you.